Everybody's getting pretty excited. Night's getting, we're just starting to get warmed up here on KBOO. It's us here, a listener-sponsored radio for the masses since 1968. And we heard Mary Johnson there and the Pentatonic Affair from Electronic Music from High Schools, something from the early 70s from Gloucester Public Schools. Anyway, one of those things you can find out there. Eliane Radig, or Radigue, Mix 1 from Vice Versa, etc. And before that, Laurie Spiegel and Appalachian Grove, spinning the tracks from the pioneering female electronic artists from back in the day when everybody was just figuring it all out. And so we heard a bunch of them tonight in honor of International Women's Month, right here on A Different Nature on KBOO 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM online, KBOO.FM/give if you want to support the radio station that you're listening to this here show on. I'd like to thank you for listening. And I'm going to get out of here, and I think Talking Earth is coming up next.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
You're listening to KBOO's All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 2 Special Programming Campaign. Check out all the great special programs we're bringing to you in February and March at kboo.fm/thrills. Help us reach our goal of $17,000 by March 25th. You can go to kboo.fm/give or text us. Type in KBOO to the number 44321. For the thrill of it all, keep listening.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month only, the Governance and Policy Committee will meet on Thursday, March 23rd at 6 p.m. instead of the third Thursday. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if the meeting is being held.
Well, the doggy went to see a show, and there he saw Brigitte. Jupiter, the naughty princess, what a feast. She really is a delicious beast. Tell me, why did you naughty little flick?
Nobody knows, nobody knows.
Tell me now, why did you naughty little flick?
Well, Patrick, that's the great Mary Makeba from South Africa, and Harry Belafonte brought her, and I really like her, voice, and so.
And this is Talking Earth.
This is the Talking Earth for
KBL Portland,
and it will be the 13th. The big deal is that KBOO has. And even KMHD and a lot of the radio stations, community radio stations, are celebrating International Women's Month. Okay, and so I thought we'd do a show, really a sort of educational show, about Portland women writers, Hazel Hall, Leanne Grable, etc., and then even. Poets and writers, and I'm just going to use some names. So I want you to kind of, hopefully we'll be able to, if you're really interested in women writers, and I am, and so is Patrick, you might use this as a teaching or a learning device, or different generations have different, don't they, Patrick? They have different things they're interested in.
Yes.
And the digital age has made reading different, etc. And I brought Walt Curtis, and I'm Patrick Bocard, my engineer, and a very he's really an excellent poet and quite engaged. Should we mention anything about Barbara Lo Morticello or anything else, or who? She's coming back, I guess, to live in town.
She's going to be living in town soon, and she will be doing shows. I'm not sure of how often, but yeah, she should.
What will you do next week then? After
the show after a week from tonight, the week from Monday the 13th is Dan Raphael's show.
Dan Raphael, and then you and I are going to collaborate with Lukewarm Water about internet.
Well, we have a
you talk
a
about
World
it.
Poetry Day special for an hour on the 21st. March 21st, and
probably 10 o'clock.
A half hour of it is me talking, hopefully mostly Kurt Schweigman, who is used to go by Lukewarm Water, has a new book out, and he's reading from that book as well as talking to me. I recorded that last night, and I'm
beautiful.
Unfortunately going to have to edit it down. But yeah.
Well, okay, that's enough for
but you. Then the other half of that hour is going to be Walt
and you,
mostly Walt, reading international literature, international poetry.
Hope we'll get their voices,
yeah,
Sabrina, and Baudelaire, and and you want to do German.
I want to read Paul Celan in German, hopefully. And
okay, that's enough info.
Yeah.
So. I think there have been, in the history of American writing, there have been two sort of poles. One, of course, a very domineering figure was Walt Whitman, who wrote in an open, expansive, operatic style, Leaves of Grass. And then there was the reclusive Emily Dickinson, who I have here the collected poems of Emily Dickinson. Strangely enough, this fits. The males took over and changed her diction, and for many years she was only published after they had gone through all of her, the way she was writing, and the males took it over. But she was reclusive, and there's a little too much death, but Emily Dickinson is very important to read, particularly when they straightened out her addiction. So I'm going to give us just, I want you to think about Emily. Here's a quick little poem. I'm going to read just very short some of this. She had a wonderful, I can't find the specific quote. "I'm nobody, are you nobody too?" And she talks about a frog and talking to the bog and about fame. And here is, "Love is anterior to life, posterior to death, initial of creation, and the exponent of breath." She writes so differently from Walt Whitman. I consider they're the two poles of American poetry and literature. "When roses cease to bloom, dear, and violets are done, when bumblebees in solemn flight have passed beyond the sun, that hand that paused to gather upon this summer's day will idle lie in Auburn, reddish brown, then take my flower, pray." And I'm just going to do just a little bit more here. I am not the soul that has a guest, seldom goes abroad, diviner crowd at home, obliterate the need and courtesy forbid, a host departure one upon himself, be visiting the emperor of men. I don't know, she... there, you know, in that period of time, there the Christian thing was still there. She was at Amherst, and she lived. She had a loss of a love, and but here, let's finish with this, and then Patrick, get ready to do a little bit of what you want to do.
Okay.
"Fame is a fickle food upon a shifting plate, whose table once a guest, but not the second time, is set, whose crumbs the crows inspect with ironic caw, flap past it to the farmer's corn, men eat of it and die." You know, you've got to look at Emily Dickinson's work, and so she's a great woman, American poet, and we wanted to go, well, do you think you want to do a little bit of those, a poetry magazine? You need to know the history. Hazel Hall was published, and even Hemingway and a whole bunch of people were published in Poetry Magazine in Chicago way back in the 20s. And Harry Monroe and Hall had a break, and I don't know why, but Poetry Magazine was reborn by Gene Kroc, probably married to, I believe, the McDonald's hamburger man. And Poetry Magazine is out there now, and I gave Poetry one of the issues that I like. I don't really like the magazine very well anymore, but Gene Kroc, if you can believe this, gave $100 million endowment to the current poetry magazine, and it's still being published. And I'm not very big about prosy long poems or weird poems, but that's amazing. $100 million to the current poetry magazine. So this one issue that I really was fond of was the lower classes women, and you might say, I wouldn't use the word peasant, I would simply say the unlettered, because Persian poetry, people like Hafiz and the great, Rumi and others, and Omar Khayyam, that's pretty educated stuff. But these are called Landays, L-A-N-D-A-Y, Afghan women and men, and the whole book has photos of Afghanistan and this, we wouldn't say illiterate, but just very simple, punchy poems. So this is in Poetry Magazine, and I actually like this issue. What was the year on this one?
2013.
Okay. Go ahead. Give us your little bit of reading there, please. Patrick Bouchard, my...
Your eyes aren't eyes. They're bees. I can find no cure for their sting.
That's how simple they are, okay?
Well, that's... I mean, that's kind of like about the male gaze.
Okay, it's about the male gaze, and we're talking about, yeah, male and female.
It's a feminist theory, but this is not about that, I think. Is there not one man here brave enough to see how my untouched thighs burn the trousers off me?
Ooh-wee.
For God's sake, I'll give you a kiss. Stop shaking my pitcher and wetting my dress.
Good Lord.
I'll kiss you in the pomegranate garden. Hush. People will think a goat's stuck in the underbrush.
Well, that's a funny one.
Come,
yeah.
Let's lie thigh against thigh. If you climb on top, I won't cry. Ouch, don't squeeze me so tight. My breasts burned from becoming a woman last night.
Well, you know what's interesting about this, of course, that's 2015, but you know, the Afghani males are back in power, and they're trying to suppress women again in Afghanistan. And
yeah.
What's your take on this, and what do you think about Poetry Magazine? This is a good issue.
Poetry Magazine or this?
This issue has a lot of...
I like this issue. I like the
a lot of photos and
people in Afghanistan.
And the suppression of women in many of the Islamic countries, the Taliban and all of that kind of thing, and the tribal men trying to control the women is outrageous. Oddly enough, Saddam Hussein in Iraq, women were... As long as you didn't bother his family or his power trip, it was a really an open society in which everything was not wrapped up in a veil and what are we calling the dress they wear,
burqa?
Yeah. Okay. Well. Do you want to continue a little bit there, or shall we?
Today I spilled the spinach on the floor. Now the old goat stands in the corner swinging a 2x4. Widows take sweets to a saint shrine. I'll bring God popcorn and beg him to kill mine.
Oh, that's really a
Ouch.
Good issue. Well, but that's enough of that. But Poetry Magazine... I'm not really big on it, and they were putting down T.S. Eliot, and you know, he was no longer relevant. You might be upset with that because Elliot putting together a great book, and you and Melissa. Oh, why don't you do a little that May Sarton poem about the cats? But Old Possum's Book of Curious Cats became on Broadway, Cats, and a huge success.
But it wasn't really his best.
It wasn't stuffy. You know, what does best mean anyway? So I stumbled across Mae Sarton here, and you're a cat lover, and let's do you can choose some of those that I have,
This is a little bit about Jones the cat.
Okay, go ahead.
Not having the best time of it, I guess, or something. When you go away, I forget how to play. When you're not there, I forget how to purr. Your voice in the house means food, means mouse, and your kind lap is my warm, soft sleep. I make starfish paws for your applause, and I had no name until you came. For all these things, Jones sits and sings, and for all these ways, Tom is filled with praise. I think Jones is the cat.
Well, how are your cats? And Melissa knows this book.
Right. They're doing okay, and they will tell me when I get home how they're doing. Like, and why have you left me for so long? You know, they don't believe I should go to work.
Okay.
But here's
but
more.
But you say that Melissa, who ran the Three Friends, and you were engaged with that wonderful coffee house when it was operating, she knows Mae Sarton, and Mae Sarton was a very successful
poet,
writer, and poet. Do you want a little more, or?
Sure.
When do you do the front of there, the cat about town? I don't know. I have the.
No, wait a second. The mouse is at large. Gentle voice would cry out as if the mouse were some very large, terrible tiger, who might leap out upon them from behind a door. Then the fur person watched them with a faintly cynical expression in his tender green eyes, while they got down on their hands and knees and searched under the beds and under chairs and under radiators. And sometimes it was days and days before the elusive mouse turned up. But after all, Tom Jones had now and then to show his independence. He had to keep his dignity, even if he had given such a large part of his life into human keeping. Or perhaps just because he had done so, he must not lose his dignity. So every now and then, he went on a rove and a ramble all himself and stayed away for hours, climbing a tree or two, or exploring a backyard several streets away, or paying a brief call at one or other of the grocers in the neighborhood just in case a small piece of raw liver might be about. Besides, he had to keep a census of the local cats and to know what was going on, even though he chose to have no part in the ludicrous wars for position and power which ungentle, terrible cats kept up for appearance's sake.
Well, that's enough about cats.
Yes, that's kind of like the history of a cat that got to go outside all the time.
Well, and I'm gonna bring you back, and we're going to get you some more. One of the great women poets that you need to know, she passed away 3 or 4 years ago, is Catherine Dunn, who wrote Geek Love. And she has a new book out, and my brain is confusing. Is it Toad or is it Truck? Catherine was on Fortunato's show Gremlin Time. Her name was Red Ryder, and she did some wonderful readings. And a very important woman poet, Catherine Dunn, Geek Love. It's about the Banuski family and Arturo the Aqua Boy. So I want to give these names really quick. Harriet Monroe, and I want to jump ahead here because this is a little bit of Leanne Grable from the Talking Rain CD that you need to know about. And Leanne she's playing the keyboard, and she's done so much. But her amazing book is Brontosaurus Illustrated. But here, I just wanted you to get a sense of all of the things she and her husband Steve Sander owned Cafe Lena. And this is a TK Records She didn't want to be Mama.
Lorna, you're a...
Oh, no, we're not. I blew it. Can't get it. Talk ad lib. Please say something about Leanne Grable, would you?
Well, Leanne Grable is part of the reason that I'm actually
Well, talk about
right
Leanne
now.
Grable, because I want to...
Because when Barbara Lamorticella decided she needed
Go ahead, yeah.
She needed someone to help her with making Talking Earth, the shows that she did. She asked around, and Leanne Grable knew that I had a FCC license and had done stuff like this before.
So you and Leanne were involved, and...
Leanne knew me because I would go to the open mic at Cafe Lena for forever, and I was hosting. They had me host the open mic for a while after Brian Christopher stopped doing it. And then she put me connecting me with Barbara, and I, started helping Barbara with the show, and eventually you decided to have me help you too. You decided that you wanted me to help you. Thank you, Walt.
Okay, here's Leanne playing the keyboard, but she's done so much more. She was... I'm gonna go back into this. She got upset with the Oregonian talking about her rape in Mexico, and as if nothing else happened in her entire life. It did. That's what Brontosaurus Illustrated is about. But, darn it, what's... Here we go. She had trouble. She didn't want to be Mommy.
And dripping with ruby.
I don't know, she works the keyboard all the time and performs with that, and what has blown me away, I got a copy from her personally, 2022 Brontosaurus Illustrated came out from the Opiate Books in Paris, and the amazing thing about it is the visuals as well. They match the text, and all of this came from a very traumatic situation when they went down to Mexico, and they were raped by some, she was raped by a peasant guy, there was a girl, and they were carrying large weapons of human annihilation, just everything shiny was sucked out of me. They thought, she thought at the time she might be killed. All I could do was stare up the dark hole of that gun. And have you had a chance to scan it? This is available at Powell's and Amazon and everywhere, but I think why this book is so important is it's not just about rape. It isn't, and that's what said her about the Oregonian Review, is like that's the only thing that happened in her life. Just for a moment, Patrick, talk a little more about how important Cafe Lena was, and a little more about Leanne, would you please?
I mean, Leanne and Steve ran Cafe Lena for well over 10 years, and it was like the center of, like,
it was a pretty important open mic, wasn't it?
It was like a three-hour open mic, and, like, I remember when I first started going there, it was like, I mean, Kevin Samselster was reading there. There was, like, a bunch of people. John Dooley was reading there. You read there.
Yeah, I mentioned some of the names, yeah, and there
you
was...
You know, there was, like, a huge amount of people who just came through there and were reading, you know, and...
Sharon Dubiago, I guess, and there
were
a lot...
Yeah, and then there was a... They would have these things on Saturday nights, too. There were kind of features, and everyone, like, it wouldn't necessarily attract the same crowd. But I would go, and I had some friends who would go, and it was, but, like, the open mic was, like, 3 hours long, and often ended, like, after midnight. Blake Nelson would show up, and he'd, like, sign up last, and people would hang out just to hear him read, because he was reading chapters from the novel he was getting published.
Was that Girl?
Yeah, it was Girl. Yeah, and it was like a lot. There was, I mean, there was stuff like that happening. Doug Spangl used to read there, was reading there all the time. And Brian Christopher Hamilton, it went by Brian Christopher Hamilton back then. He was hosting it.
And what was the name of his magazine?
Quiet Lion Press.
Quiet Lion Press, yes.
That's the name of the press.
Well,
but, like, yeah, it was just like a big thing in this, and it was an amazing open mic. I mean, I'd been to the Nuyorican, but their poetry slams are really cool and get a lot of people, but sometimes their open mics are often like start at three in the morning, so they don't exactly get a lot of people. They don't all stick around to the end, but. I mean, it was kind of amazing, and it was like a, you know, yeah, lasted a while, and it was pretty important to this town, like in the 90s especially, and just kind of like, literary life in a lot of ways. I don't know what else to say.
Leanne is still ongoing. She taught some girls who were having cutting problems, and she was in the school system. I think she's sort of tired about teaching and dealing with the bureaucrats.
I don't know, maybe, yeah.
I talked to her on the phone the other day, but I want to recommend Brontosaurus Illustrated. Take a look at it. It's an amazingly interesting... Leanne Grable is a poet, artist, teacher, rape survivor, brontosaurus killer. So she had to transcend the trauma and the rifle. This book is so funny because she found her voice. It goes beyond... I feel that poets need to find their authentic voice, and you're not really... you're just because you went to an MFA, Master of Fine Arts class, or you study under Stafford or Robert Bly or somebody... I want to get back to Brontosaurus Illustrated. There are incredible, an astonishing triumph of honesty and language, and a blueprint for taking ownership of something traumatic and turning it into beauty, art, and truth. That was Larry Colton, who... Brontosaurus Illustrated is a story of a rape that is now 50 years old. Armed men in black ski masks slithered out of the shrubbery on a Baja beach as Nina and her friends were enjoying the sunset. Nina, of course, is Leanne. Everything was different after that, or was it? How could she know? Is Nina Gold a lucky victim, rifled with muscular resilience because she turned her life around, or is she warped and ruined forever? But, you know, no, that isn't... This book, as I said, she found her voice. She transcends that situation, and we get her life story and these amazing quotes. These are some of them. Albert Einstein, she puts these quotes in. I got raped 50 years ago. It was so long ago. People who weren't even born then are already dead, and they have been for years. Richard Nixon was president when I got raped. The Vietnam War was breaking our hearts on screen in real time. This was new for war. There was hot animosity between decades. Gas cost 35 cents. Let me just jump around here, but... it is so well illustrated. My first casual sex was a Palo Alto townie named Johnny. He was a graduate student, and he had two housemates who were graduate students. One was studying Plato, one studying existentialism. I really want you to look at this and perhaps buy it. It's very important. She took Johnny home to the family in Stockton, California. Marjorie Sharp was born in Stockton also. But the drawings are so incredible. The opiate books with... they're intelligent. I mean, some of the quotes are Andre Gide, The Age of Harry. I have wished to be happy as if there were nothing else for me to be. A bit of grace for me, for you. Now come on, come on, now come on. Mexican folk song adapted by Richie Valens. I really want you to check out Brontosaurus Illustrated, Leanne Grable. And here's a Jerzy Kosinski quote. And I like the hotshot quotes because what does Jerzy Kosinski say? I know there are people who must be completely independent of others in order to feel free. For them, responding to someone is like obeying a command. Any action that does not spring from their own desires is fake, false. I can understand this compulsion for detachment. Here we go. Occasionally I would read an erotic piece of literature that worked, full of tongues and loins, odors and moistures and throbbing and thrusting, and my desire, semi-comatose, which twitch away, roll over, put its arm out with tears in its eyes. But something always snapped my libido out of it, and my libido would go back to the crypt, mumbling something about something head down. Would it be different if I hadn't got raped? That's what I want to know, but it's impossible to know. I really recommend this book, and you need to know more about Leanne Grable. She was one of the great Portland poets.
She is one of the great Portland poets.
Yeah, would you say that? And I brought up Catherine Dunn a little bit, Geek Love. I want to bring up Hazel Hall. The Oregon Cultural Heritage created a, so we've got Catherine Dunn, we've got Leanne Grable, we've got, now we've got Hazel Hall, who died on Mother's Day in 1924. But we have a poetry park at 22nd Place, and William Stafford helped our group put the house on the National Register, and in which Hazel Hall lived with her sister who went to Reed College. It's Ruth Hall, yeah. I guess it is, and then Ruth lived there longer, but the Poetry Park is worth visiting, and there is a wonderful park with marble, with poems on them, written in marble, and Hall, there's one, The Listening Macaws is one. Because she did needlework and sewing, which was not thought of as... The book is called Curtains. Her last book was The Cry of Time. And I'm... Because we're talking about women and the amazing... culture they have that I don't think many men get into. So she did knitting. There's some of it in her. She's Brian Booth of the Oregon Book Awards, and the Oregon Book Awards are coming up again. Rescued her diaries, and it's connected to Poetry Magazine, the Harriet Monroe version. And here it is. I'm going to do two poems about being... Her eyesight went bad doing this needlework for rich families in the West Hills. Instruction. My hands that guide a needle in their turn are led relentlessly and deftly as a needle leads a thread. Other hands are teaching my needle when I sew. I feel the cool, thin fingers of hands I do not know. They urge my needle onward. They smooth my seams until the worry of my stitches smothers in their skill. All the tired women who sewed their lives away speak in my deaf fingers as I sew today. One of the intriguing and I did an article called No Frail Servant of Utility, and this took me years to figure what this is. The forecourt, not the forecourt fountain, but the fountain in, the Skidmore Fountain.
Skidmore Fountain, yeah.
Yeah, there are women under a brimming basin, and in sculpture they're called a caryatid, I think. But that's what this poem is about. And I love this poem. Made of crepe de chine, a needle running in white crepe de chine is not the frail servant of utility. I wrote a whole article about her. She was taken up by Samuel Lancaster, who was the engineer for the old Columbia River Highway. Is not the frail servant of utility it was designed to be. It is an arrow of silver sunlight plunging with a waterfall, and hands moving in white crepe de chine are not slaves of the precedent that governs them. They are the crouching women of a fountain. That's exactly what you see when you look at that fountain. They are the crouching women of a fountain, the Skidmore Fountain, who have sprung from marble into life to bathe ecstatically in the brimming basin. So the collected poems of Hazel Hall came out from Oregon State University Press, OSU Press. You can get the book. You should know about Hazel Hall, Catherine Dunn, Leanne Grable. We've got to stay on top of this here. Did you want to read your poem, Austin? Do you want to bring it really quickly, or what would you like to do? Hurry, please.
All right. This is a monster poem. I will explain it afterward and not before.
Book. Suction. I hugger on the temple veins, an inner light filling the pages.
Oh, God.
Paper tendrils hook the flesh. Yet another victim in Boho Cafe. No one gets up to help her or him or bothers to notice.
Jane Austen claims another for her influence.
Now, tell them who Jane Austen is, of course.
Jane Austen, obviously, is the author of Pride and Prejudice, which is the most famous of her books, Sense and Sensibility, Persuasion, Northanger Abbey, among other classics. She is one of the most famous and important authors in English. That poem is just basically a description of someone reading, and a very bizarre description of someone reading Jane Austen and what it does to you, where it sucks you in.
We're getting lost here, and that's fine. How many minutes we got? I've got to bring up.
I can say that those of you out there you can support Talking Earth and KBO Portland.
That's
by
right.
Going on to the website, going to kboo.fm/give. Thrills, no frills.
They're trying to raise $17,000.
Keep supporting KBOO that way. You can designate Talking Earth is the reason you're supporting KBOO. Just wanted to mention that, you know, if you're going to be mind addicted by Jane Austen's work.
I'm going to do this wherever it happens. Harry Belafonte brought back... There's Harry. Murray McCabe and... Harry Belafonte and... Okay, we're going to go out with McCabe and all of that, but you need to know that last month was Black Heritage, yes, on KBOO, and the incredible Queen of Bohemia, Louise Bryant, met John Reed here in Portland, and the world was such a smaller place back then that... I don't think what happened is that Bullitt, the ambassador to Russia, dumped Louise Bryant because she caught Durkheim's disease, which was made your body and you get fleshy and weird, and he finally divorced her. But Louise was called the Queen of Bohemia. She was in Greenwich Village at Providence Town with John Reed, and there was the great playwright that...
Eugene O'Neill,
and... but what one of the first many of the jazz men and poets and writers went to Europe because the racial prejudice was so strong here in the United States, and not only in the South but even in the North. But what Louise did, worked tirelessly for one of the first Harlem Renaissance deserters of the First World War, Claude McKay, 1890-1948. And she spent a great deal of energy getting Claude McKay published. And he didn't want to. And in Greenwich Village, there was Edna St. Vincent Millay, and called her Vincent, and Edna St. Vincent Millay is a great American woman poet, but this probably was in Poetry Magazine, Claude McKay's "If We Must Die, Let It Not Be Like Hogs, Hunted and Penned in an Inglorious Spot, While Round Us Bark the Mad and Hungry Dogs, Making Their Mock at Our Accursed Lot. If we must die, oh, let us nobly die, so that our precious blood may not be shed in vain. Then even the monsters we defy..." Brought up your monster again there, Patrick.
Yeah.
"Shall be constrained to honor us through, though dead, O kinsmen, we must meet the common foe. Though far outnumbered, let us show us brave, and for their thousand blows deal one death blow. What though before us lies the open grave, like men we'll face the murderous cowardly pack, pressed to the wall, dying but fighting back. So Louise Bryan spent a great deal of energy getting Claude McKay to get published. And we have another thing here we need to know about Tin House Magazine. And so what have we done? We've done
Leanne Grable.
Leanne Grable, Catherine Dunn.
Catherine Dunn, Emily Dickinson, Mae Swenson.
Louise Bryant, and
some Afghan poetry.
And Afghan poetry, and I wanted to bring it up, but I actually want to dedicate this show to my sister Cleo, who works with the damaged or disabled children in Hillsboro. And I also want to, if there's a chance, to read my mother, but I'll read about a poem about my mother. But come on, do we know about Tin House Magazine? So what are we? We've got one more poet here. The world was a smaller place back then.
Should read your poem to your sister.
I'm going to read it for Lorca and my mother. I need to play a little. I need to go out with the music, but
yeah.
This is a very important poem. The Empty Cup. It was done in 2017 for Lorca and my mother. I imagine myself in the middle of the room, an empty cup without wine or blood. No one drinks. No one sees the rosy skin of love. It is emptiness of the void. It is the symbol of loss and eternity, silence of moon rock and shadow of oblivion. Only an empty cup in the middle of the room. No one drinks, no one sees. There was no one in the room except for me. I don't exist. Clear light streams through the window, filling cup to the top. Holy light, like my mother's old hands and beliefs, washing the cup with her prayers. God approves. God doesn't care, never drinking wine or blood or admiring rosy skin. He fills and empties it daily. God brims the cup with holy light, clear light, like my mother's prayers. She's been gone for 15 years. Okay, I'm going to take the, if I can here, and we're going to play some music. I want to go out with this poem, though. If I can. I don't know. I can't get anything right here, but I'm going to try to do the poem of Jesus Loved Women. But maybe I won't get it. Who knows? I probably won't get it. But Mary Magdalene and all of that, and okay, Patrick.
We can't.
I blew it. Let's go out with this.
We can't.
Mary McCain at Jamie and
yes.
South Africa, Mary McCabe.
You've been listening to Talking Earth. KBO Portland on your 90.7 on your FM dial.
Tell them again when we're going to do the...
March 21st, World Poetry Day special.
Oh, and
coming up. Next week is Dan Raphael.
And that'll be the 21st, but listen, Ursula Le Guin, I have to tell you, the University of California, Berkeley, Ursula Le Guin was given the honor of doing all the fragments of Sappho, the 10th muse, Sappho, Isle of Lesbos. And more than that, Ursula Le Guin translated Gabriel Mistral, the other Nobel Prize winner in Chile, besides Pablo Neruda. So Ursula Le Guin is just an incredible force. I'm going to try to have her voice. And so, okay, we're going out here. Take care of your mother, your sister, your women, your girlfriends, your daughter.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
I'm Doug McVeigh, host of Free Culture Radio. Every month, we bring you 30 minutes of news and information about people who use drugs, as we discuss topics like safe supply, safe consumption spaces, decriminalization, legalization, harm reduction, human rights, civil rights,